Good morning, church. It's good to have you all here today. If you notice, crowd might be a little, there's already been several that have already taken off and headed towards Tennessee, the Stoners, Dave Sr., and that Joe, Beth, and Ed, and is that all of them from our group? I think. I can't remember. Anyway, so pray for that. Also, since I'll be gone tonight from here, come and encourage Isaac Swartz. He'll be presenting the message tonight, and so he always does a good job. So look forward to that as well. All right, so we are continuing our series entitled The Ordinary Life of the Son of God. And I've listed this section or this message as dedicated desires. And I want for us to understand that just because Jesus was God in the flesh didn't mean that he didn't also have desires here on earth that were very physical. Now, we looked at like eating and drinking and sleeping, and those a few weeks ago. But as we'll look today, that these are things that characteristics that we all should be trying to apply to our life. And so the Bible states that Jesus did countless things besides miracles, like teaching, sharing parables, eating, walking, crying, showing compassion, interacting, excuse me, with children, engaging in theological debates, and performing just ordinary daily tasks. And so the verse I want for us to kind of think about today with this message is that of Luke chapter 2, verse 52. Remember when Jesus was still just a very young lad, 12 years old in the temple, discussing with the leaders there. And as it finishes out those verses, it says, "And Jesus grew in wisdom and stature and favor with God and man." I want for us to see those things. There's nothing miraculous there. Everything that Jesus was doing as a 12-year-old boy was quite normal. Was quite normal and can happen with us. Jesus, he grew in wisdom. That means he was learning and listening, studying, paying attention. And then it says he grew in stature. That just means he was growing up physically. And in favor with God and with man. And so, in other words, as he would be walking through the Jewish community, somebody might say, "Well, there's Jesus. He's just a nice little guy." You know, and seeing him at this point, and, you know, probably come across his Sabbath school teacher once in a while as they was walking out through town and say, "Yeah, he's one of our best students. He might be our best student," she said, you know, they said. Anyway, so what we're just looking at, these are just ordinary things that are happening. None of these are supernatural. He grew mentally. He grew physically. He grew in relationship with God. He grew in his relationship with mankind as well. And all of these are things that we are or can be growing into as well. There is nothing miraculous about these things other than the desire to dedicate oneself to them. And so, as I said, I've listed this as a dedicated desire. The first thing I want to look at that Jesus was dedicated to, I'm not saying this is the number one, but it's probably pretty close to the number one. I don't have them in necessarily any order. But this is what I thought of anyway. It was Jesus was engaged in prayer. And he chose to be engaged in prayer. Sometimes we stumble upon prayer accidentally, right? We'll be driving down the road and somebody pulls out in front of us and we have to slam on the brakes. And we're like, "Oh, thank you, Lord." See, we just accidentally prayed, right? But he had an intention to that. He often withdrew by himself to pray. Prayer was one of the most important for Jesus. And it should be for us as well. Let's take a look at some of the times of his prayer. I've not ever been engaged in this one, an all-night prayer. Even if one tries, I was thinking about that the other day, the old hymn. And this is just sheerly me, that even when I set off to have a good old-fashioned sweet hour of prayer, I very seldom ever make it. Jesus could pray all night long. And that showed his dedication to the mission, his dedication to his Father, his dedication to those around him. Anyway, Luke 6:12, it was at this time that he went off to the mountain to pray, and he spent the whole night there, the whole night in prayer to God. Now, I know this is a discussion I've been having. So Jesus, remember, is God. So when he prays here, he's praying to the Father, asking the Father for wisdom and guidance and direction, which we'll look at some of that later on decisions that he makes. How about John 17? Not going to look at this whole chapter. It's a great chapter for us to look at and to study. But how about Jesus with his high priestly prayer? Praying for himself, praying for his disciples at that time. And do you know what? I believe that while he was there praying that high priestly prayer, that each and every one of us, all the future church, the Christians of today and for these past 2,000 years, were on his mind. That's what that high priestly prayer was about. And so as we've been doing our study through Hebrews, just a reminder for us of him being our ultimate high priest. How about he prayed in the Garden of Gethsemane? We see that many times. Matthew chapter 26, verses 39 says, "My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me." This would have been here towards the end. "Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will." Anytime we talk about prayer, this is one of those things that we have to bring up, we have to talk about, that we have to focus on, that we have our desires, that we have the way we would like to see things done, that we have the way we would like to have things work out. And we do pray that his will be done. I do find, and not that, because I think we all still have our temporal thinking many times in our prayer, but when we can set that aside and just strictly focus on what God's will is for our life, our will then will line up with his will way more often. Way more often, if not every time. And this is one of those things he was struggling with. Going to the cross. The biggest decision of his life, but he was dedicated to it. This is my mission. This is why I'm here. But if we could do something else, that'd be great. But if not, nevertheless, not my will, yours be done. How about giving thanks? Jesus gave thanks on numerous occasions that we see this. John 11:41. Then Jesus looked up and said, "Father, I thank you that you heard me." Now you got to understand where he's at right here in this John chapter 11. What's happening? Who's passed away? Who's died? Right? Lazarus has passed away, but he still has the time to say, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me." Right? John 11:35, we see that Jesus wept. He's engaged here in some very highly emotional situations with some highly emotional women at this time as well. But yet he still takes time to thank God And ultimately, remember, he was going to bring them, because as Coop likes to point out, gets there. Lazarus has been in the grave for 4 days, and he stinketh. He stinketh. And so as we see this, comes to life. And what is the reason for this? So that they can see, yes, but to bring glory to the Father once again. I'm thankful that you have heard me. How about some of the times when Jesus is on the cross? These are the last two ones that we'll look at here as far as Jesus was engaged in prayer. Perhaps it's a reminder back to Psalm 22. As we see that Psalm of David, a prophecy that is given with them walking about, the people that are crucifying him, wagging their heads, spitting, mocking, doing all these things to disgrace the Son of God. And Jesus has enough wherewithal, enough compassion still left in his heart, enough desire for the completion of his mission, for the saving of every soul, that he is able to look to heaven and say, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Jesus was engaged in prayer. We're told by the Apostle Paul to pray without ceasing. And as we said, we can do that as we're driving down the road. Closed eyes, not necessarily a necessity there. But we could pray. We could talk to our Maker more than we do, I think. We do, I hope, take small moments, longer times, to capitalize on those opportunities that we have. But Jesus was always engaged in prayer, even as he is being persecuted by his enemies. Remember, it wasn't for the righteous that Jesus died, as we're told in Romans 5, but it was for the ungodly. And we fall right in that group. How about the last one that we want to look at as far as Jesus being engaged in prayer was his final words, that Father, into your hand commend my spirit. That I commend my spirit. That this is it. It's over. I'm done. It is finished. Here we go. Talking to the Father. Maybe he felt at this time nobody else wanted to listen. Maybe he felt at this time, this, you know, as it was drawing to an end, that into your hands I commit my spirit. That he did not only do that or acknowledge that at the end of his life, he acknowledged that his entire earthly life. And that's what we ought to be dedicated to, that we are committing our spirit, our soul, the very life, the being that we have, that we have committed it to you. Take it. Use it, and when he dies, that transaction has been made final. The redemption cost of his blood is what saved us. Jesus was engaged in prayer as we look at these physical things that Jesus did. The next one we want to look at is Jesus served others. We kind of talked about this one a few weeks ago, but Jesus washed his disciples' feet. He prepared food. He served food. He tried to be as hospitable as he could. But let's just talk about this as being a servant of all. Mark chapter 10 and verse 45, for even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve. The King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, the master of all glory, shouldn't he be the one being served? And yet, he says, I did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. John 13, 14, 15. If I then, the Lord and the teacher, washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet, for I gave you an example that you should also do as I did to you. And so why did he serve? Why did he serve? Because Jesus knew it was going to be important for his followers to serve as well. And that's why when it comes to the opportunity, when it comes to the responsibility, when it comes even as a part of accountability, when each one of us may be asked at a certain time in our life to serve, especially for the Lord, please respond in the affirmative. Please respond. It's too easy sometimes for us to say, no, you know, I just don't have the time. Really, you don't have the time for Jesus? Do you stop and think about what we're saying? No, you don't have the time for your fellow man. You don't have time for your fellow Christians. And yet Jesus said, I came to serve. Don't we want to be like Jesus? Luke 22:27. For who is greater, the one who reclines at the table or the one who serves? Is it not the one who reclines at the table? But I am among you as one who serves. Philippians chapter 2. We've looked at this one, I think, every week so far. So we're not going to read it, but you can go back and look at this as well. But Philippians chapter 2 verses 5 through 7 describes how Jesus in very nature was God and made himself nothing by taking on the very nature of a servant. Of a servant. Matthew 20:28. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. Much the same as the Mark passage we looked at in Mark chapter 10. But Jesus came to serve, ultimately to serve our needs as our Messiah on the cross at Calvary, our propitiation, our bloodshed sacrifice, everything that he could do to save us. But there was nothing along the way that Jesus would not stop and do or share or do anything to care for those who needed his assistance. A good thing for the church to learn as well. Jesus taught and Jesus preached. You don't know how many times throughout the week I wanted to say Jesus taught and Jesus prought, but I know that's not proper English. So I just left it at Jesus taught. But Jesus taught and he preached and he shared the gospel and he made this a part of who he was. But you know what he did first? Remember? It goes with the servant thing. He cared for the needs of the people. How many times do you see of people coming to him, ailing, hurting, all sorts of physical ailments, all sorts of people that were hungry. Remember, send them away, let them find food on their own, all sorts of different things. Jesus always went out of his way to take care of their physical problems first. Well, what's a physical problem? It's what we call life. Right? And so as we look at that, it's a reminder to us, we're going to have flat tires. Right? We're going to have... Or as Carolyn had somebody run into the back of her car this week, right? Or you have emotional struggles. Does anybody here get hungry? Right? And so what the Lord... Yeah, George is like, what's that? It does good to be hungry once in a while. But what he did is he took care of their physical needs so that he could have full attention on their spiritual needs. So that he could teach them. You know, it is hard to listen when your stomach's growling. Right? As much as you want those three pieces of bacon, Gary. Right? Oh, And so as we look at that, Jesus used parables to explain the kingdom of God, the kingdom of heaven. Matthew 4:23, Jesus went throughout Galilee teaching in the synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom, telling them that the church is here, or it's drawing near. Matthew 7:28 and 29, when Jesus had finished these words, the crowds were amazed at his teaching, for he was teaching them as one having authority and not as their scribes. They noticed that when Jesus taught, he taught something different. He still taught from Moses. He still taught from the prophets. He still taught from the Psalms. But the way that he inspired the people with it was that now it's not just a matter of 613 different rules to follow. This is how we make our life to be what God in heaven wants for our life to be. And people would sit up and listen, because he was bringing about the same message, but changing lives. I think we shared this a couple weeks ago, but so, you know, each one of those Pharisees and scribes came up with those extra laws to bring them closer to the Lord, is what they perceived it as. But Jesus says, you know, and goes through, just as Josh had shared this morning with the Ten Commandments. That was an insight. The giving of the Ten Commandments was an insight to God's mind on how people should live. Problem is, we don't like it. They don't like the 613. They don't like the 10. I'm just letting you know that when Jesus taught, he took all of those and raised the bar. Right? Go ahead, hate your enemies. Jesus says, no. Love your enemies. Take care of them. The whole heaping coals of fire on their head. That's actually looking out for them and caring for them. Matthew 11:1, and after instructing his 12 disciples, Jesus went on to teach and to preach in their cities. Luke 4:43-44, but he said to them, I must preach the kingdom of God to the other cities also, for I was sent for this purpose. So he kept on preaching in the synagogues of Judea to bring the message from the God of the Jews to the Jewish people, because they were missing it. But Jesus tried to take care of them physically so that he could reach them spiritually. And then the last one here that he had to put a dedicated desire into, and that was, Jesus made decisions. What a coincidence. So do we. The only thing is, every decision he made was a good one. How many of us are running 100% on our decision making now? And why is that? Because from the very beginning, and before time itself that we know of, he's already submitted to the Father's will. John chapter 6 in verse 38 says, for I have come down from heaven not to do my will, but to do the will of him who sent me. Now, I don't know what it is, why it is. It's just the inerrant struggle of the nature of man within us. But somewhere along the line, all of us, at some point or another, just decides, can't I just do what I want for once? Right? No matter how hard we try. Maybe I'm just the only one willing to admit it. But I think we're all that way. But Jesus always submitted his will to the Father in everything. In everything. You ever been, I just want to let those people know how unchristian they are. But if I would do that, I would only prove how unchristian I am. Right? See, we try to justify, it's a struggle. But Jesus always made good decisions. I know Mr. Burton, after he prays with his kids in the morning, and I had heard another parent did this several years ago when they dropped her daughter off at the door. It was kind of through the drive-thru in the morning, which is kind of a funny thing, because if you knew the mom, you'd be like, take your own advice, lady. But she would always say to the little girl, make the good decisions. And so Mr. Burton does that with Asher and Jayla each morning. Right, Asher? Make good decisions. And so they go out. And I can't help but think every day the Lord's looking at us and saying, right? Bruce, make good decisions. Right? My wife still tells me that as I walk out the door. Right? Make good decisions. Right? But we have to submit to Him. And when we understand that idea of submitting to Him, it's because this is at the forefront of our mind. We want to please Him. We want to please Him. We want to please the Father. Jesus did. John 8:29b. For I always do the things that are pleasing to Him. How many times do we do what's pleasing to me? But Jesus, every time, made the right decision. How about obedience in prayer? We kind of touched on this one a little bit earlier, but Luke 22:42, when he says, not my will, but yours be done. Because we're praying, we're petitioning, we're asking for help. Do that quite often, and I like to throw in there, just, in case the Lord wants to try to give me more credit than I deserve, I just always say, you're dealing with a pretty dumb guy, you need to make it pretty plain and simple for me. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done. Help me out in trying to figure out what needs to happen, and I ain't real brilliant. Help me. It's that obedience in prayer. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done. And I can almost imagine, I'm not sure exactly the time frame, but you hear a twig snap, you turn around, and there's Judas, and he's giving you a kiss. So what do you think the Father's answer was on nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done? Obedience in prayer. And Jesus made decisions with this. And this is, mind you, the Son of God. But He always sought out divine guidance. The Son of God even did that. He lets them know that I'm going to be leaving you, but another Comforter is going to be coming. Somebody else to guide you. Father, what do you want me to do? Father, help me in this situation. Father, please show me your desire. Show me what you want me to do. Every time Jesus made decisions, it was about the divine guidance there. He needed help. At least He sought out help for making His decisions. Here's what He says in John 5:30. I can of myself do nothing. As I hear, I judge. And my judgment is just because I seek not my own will, but the will of my Father which has sent me. It's always easy to know you're doing the right thing when you do what the Father has asked you to do. Jesus knew that. Jesus understood that. And so as we look at each one of these actions, everyday actions, and then we put these along with miracles, It reveals to us who Jesus fully is, that Jesus is fully human, and that Jesus is fully God. Because as we have these last 3 weeks been looking at trying to do specifically physical things that you and I can still all do, there is still the spiritual side, the divinity side, the deity side of our Savior. And we dare never, ever want to forget that. But we finish up with making decisions. Jesus made decisions based on the will of the Father. As we come to the plan of salvation here this morning, if you're here and you're outside of Jesus Christ, I'm going to ask you a question. If the Lord returned today, would you be going to heaven? Please make sure that we get divine guidance as we answer that question. What does the Bible say? Have you believed in Jesus Christ as the Son of God? Have you repented of your sin? Have you confessed Jesus Christ as Lord? Have you been immersed into Jesus Christ for the forgiveness of your sin? And are you doing the best to live the most faithful life for Jesus that you possibly can? Now is the time. Here's the opportunity. Jesus always made the right decision. We encourage you to start living today by making the right decision. Will you stand as they lead us in a song of invitation?